What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Convincing Creatives Podcast. Today, I've got an interview with Dan Perlman for you, and I think if you're a filmmaker of any kind, you're really going to enjoy it. Dan is the lead actor, the showrunner, as well as writer of the Showtime show Flatbush Misdemeanors. Dan also created an original version of the show back in, I believe, 2017 that was a web series, and we talk about how he got that web series picked up by Showtime and developed into a Showtime television show that you can actually go stream right now. Would highly recommend. I watched it shortly before we did our interview, and it was extremely funny, also very heartfelt at times, so I would definitely recommend you check it out if you like comedy-drama balances in your TV shows. We also talk a lot about the philosophy of filmmaking, writing, making it, and just sort of everything that comes with that. So I think if you enjoy any of those things, you know, if you make stuff of your own, whether it's film or really art of any kind, I think there's something here for you to take away from the greater conversation with Dan. So again, want to thank Dan for taking the time to do this interview. But before that, just want to remind everyone that we have got audio episodes on all your favorite podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, etc. We also have video versions on YouTube that you can check out. Highly recommend you subscribe so you're always going to be in the know for fresh episodes. And last but not least, I'll plug my own movie. It's called Panda Barrett. Gotta do it. It's a micro-budget feature we made here in North Carolina right before the pandemic, and it's wacky. It's full of a very kind of comedy-drama balance as well, and I think it's something you'll enjoy if you enjoy music, the creative process, and just the surrealism that comes with having a panda bear in a mascot costume following you around everywhere you go. Anyway, enough plugging. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Let's get into the full episode with Dan. So before we jump into things, I know that you have a brand new show on Showtime. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It's called Flatbush Misdemeanors. It's set in Flatbush, Brooklyn. It's myself and my friend Kevin Iso, who co-created it first as an independent digital series. We just made three episodes ourselves, three 15-minute episodes on no budget. And the first one started doing well and winning some awards in film festivals and stuff. And then, you know, it got turned into a half-hour show on Showtime. And it's a comedy. It's, you know, I play a bad science teacher at a public school in Flatbush, and Kevin delivers food for a roti shop in the first season. But it's just about the neighborhood and the community and how we intersect with it.
Absolutely. And I watched the first season. I got to say, it's really entertaining. I laughed and even got a little misty here and there. I really liked how you balanced the comedy and drama of the show.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, that was what we were aiming for, so I'm glad.
Yeah. Well, I think that's always like the biggest trick. Like, you know, I'm also a filmmaker, and that's something I like to do is like, you know, kind of sneak people in, I almost is the best way I would describe it. Cause, you know, so often I feel like, you know, the world's heavy and people, you know, they're coming home from work and they just want to sit on the couch and watch something. So, you know, if I go full drama, sometimes people are like, you know, maybe I'll switch it to something else. But sometimes if you kind of set up the comedy as, you know, is true to life, you know, cause life, even when it's hard, there are funny moments, like there's awkward situations that arise. And I think that's another thing that's done really well in the show. But can you talk about that? Like, talk about that balance a bit, because I find that's very crucial sometimes to, like, you know, putting a message out in the world where sometimes you don't need to be so direct with a full drama.
Yeah, I guess I always feel like for me, the best dramas that I've seen are funny also, you know? I mean, The Sopranos has so many funny moments, or you know, The Wire, even as dramatic as it is, has funny moments. Like, there's always kind of, I think, because essentially, and the best comedies, I think, have some serious moments and are not just full, total, you know, ridiculous or whatever. Like, so anything has that balance, because I think at the core, like, anything that's like really, really good is probably character-driven. And when you have like characters who you're kind of diving into, they're going to be funny and they're going to fuck up and they're going to make mistakes and they're going to, you know, hit emotional points and, you know, they're going to run the gamut just like anybody does.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, zooming into the show a bit, like, you know, you have a character like Drew who, you know, is very bombastic at times and he does provide some comedy, but then you do see, I think in the later episode, a lot of what makes him tick and why he is the way he is. And then right. You get into the drama. And I feel like, you know, that's what is, I think, the payoff for when, you know, any filmmaker aims to do the balance of comedy and drama, because, you know, you could so easily make a character like that just be comic relief and leave it one note. But I really appreciated in the show how, you know, there were layers, and I think that, you know, sometimes you would start to unravel them as you went on.
Yeah, anybody, I mean, the goal with anybody is, like, you know, anytime you learn something, anytime you see a character, you might learn something new about them or see a different side of them, because we all play a million different roles. We're always, you know, we're a friend, and we're a partner, and we're a coworker, and we're, you know, a guardian or whatever, you know, and so it's always this weird balance, and we are these different things to different people. So it's fun to show that. And yeah, for Drew, which Hassan Johnson, who was Weebay in The Wire, is so funny. And so he's able to, like, be that, you know, comedy or when needed, but then is also just, like, you know, really, really good at just delivering these incredibly serious moments. And so he is a guy that, like, he has a unique ability to, he's able to say, like, I'm going to kill you, or you should drink this healthy soda, in the exact same intonation, and you fully believe both of them. And it's either funny, it's at once funny and serious. Like, he is able, through his persona and his voice, just hit all those different notes just himself, you know, which gives the depth to that character that is needed. But even a character like Kareem Green, who plays my stepdad on the show, he also, you know, he's a big comic relief, but then over the course of the season, I think you see, like, oh, he's not just, like, negging him, he actually also genuinely cares about him. And so then it's like, how do we go a little deeper with him, and how do we go a little deeper with everybody? So that's the fun of it.
100%. And I mean, his character, I think there was a really nice payoff in the episode where y'all go to your mom's house in the show, and then you see how he's helped her out. And, you know, I think again, that's just a payoff, because another character, like you mentioned, that at first appears to be, like, kind of a comedy, you know, side of things, but there's more there. And I think, you know, and again, that's the payoff. And, you know, and it's okay to have comedy just be comedy. Like, that's fine, sure, too. But, you know, I like you said, life, we are a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, showing those sides is what creates connection. And I, you know, again, I can just speak for myself, but I think that's what I, you know, took away from the show, is that, you know, it definitely felt real in ways that, you know, a lot of shows feel too comedic sometimes, or maybe too dramatic. Like, I think there is an interesting balance going on. So, like, let's rewind a bit. I know that, you know, the original web series was kind of the launching point for the show, and you mentioned that, so I won't, you know, retread too much there. But what inspired, like, your initial passion for film and storytelling? You know, here on Convincing Creatives, we talk to people all the time who, you know, have a kind of origin story. So, like, kind of what took you to the place where you're at now?
I always wanted to be, I'm a stand-up comedian, so that's what I've primarily been. And, you know, that's what, you know, until COVID, I did stand up every night for, you know, eight and a half years or so. And so I always wanted to be a stand-up who makes things, who, you know, could make a show and or make a film or something. And so I always loved sort of, like, diving into those, like, super specific worlds, and being able to, like, hit different perspectives than you can hit in stand-up. So that was what drew me initially. So, you know, it started in college. I went to Northwestern University, and, you know, I started making sketches. I, you know, worked with some, you know, super talented people who are still friends of mine, who are all doing, you know, cool stuff now as well. And so we just started making these little sketches, and then after college, started making more sketches. Once I met Kevin, we started making more, and then just wanted to make stuff that was more narrative. It just feels fun to sort of, like, try to hit a different note and, like, sort of live with the characters. I don't know. That's always really appealed to me. And to try to make something exciting out of the mundane has always been exciting, both in stand-up and in filmmaking.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is, you know, when you find the right people to work with, they bring it out of you, too. And I, you know, especially like an ensemble, you know, like you have on the show, I think, you know, the two main characters really help the show introduce you to other characters, but I really also enjoy when you kind of veer off into the other characters' worlds, because when they do tie back in to the main characters, I actually think it makes the story even more rich. And so I think, you know, it's finding those little narrative beats, like, and you know, so often too, I feel like it's challenging to find an ensemble that gels so well. Because I, do you have tips for that, like when you're casting or anything like that, or is it just kind of bringing in people you've worked with before helps?
Well, it's a balance, because like a big help is people you've worked with before and or are writing it for their voices. So
that's true.
Somebody like Kareem, who plays my stepdad, or somebody like Yamanika, like we know the exact energy that they can bring. We know the energy that they can bring. We know the sort of voice they have. We know how they're going to hit jokes, and we know how they balance with our character, our characters and energies and stuff. So we can do that. But then also, it really comes in the writing of the characters. Also, is you just it's fun to kind of slowly branch out the world organically, you know. So you start it, you sort of you ever write and you do like mind mapping, so like, yes. Okay, this leads to this and this leads to that. It's very similar in writing. It's like, okay, well, this character leads to that, so then what would happen with this character? Like, okay, so child services comes and are they asking about Zaina and Drew? It's like, oh, maybe they're asking about Dami, who's somebody else we've seen. So what would happen there? Oh, her family, maybe her parents are strict, but maybe they're not that bad. She's just on some, you know, teenage rebellion shit. And so, but it's like, okay, that builds out that world a little more and lets us get a little messier. So I think those are the two big things. But if you're lucky enough to know, to have people that that you know can sort of bring some added strength to it, then it's like, use them. Yeah, that's great. There's no thought that, like, you know, Kevin and I have to be the funniest people in the scene. I love doing scenes with Kareem, because mostly I don't have to do that much, you know. I put it all on him, and I can just, you know, Chris Paul, pass the ball to him, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, too, I think it's fun when there is scenes like that, and then you just will give off a little look, or, you know, another character will. And it's just those subtle moments that will give you sometimes the biggest laughs. You don't even have to write things. They're just very organic, I think.
Yeah. And then, and as far as what, yeah. And I think for us, like, Hey Arnold was a big reference point.
Really? Oh, cool.
Funny enough, because that show was very good, you know, at decentering the main character and also like diving into and showing a city in an organic way, I felt like, ironically, even though they were 10-year-olds, but also like not being afraid to dive into these other worlds, you know. It would be like, okay, this is Mr. Wynn, the guy from the boarding house, who at first he's just a one joke thing, but then it's like, okay, the Christmas special is really about him.
Yeah.
Or okay, it's Harold's bar mitzvah, you know, and like, let's live with him and his fear, and he was just a loud idiot before. So it's like this willingness to like look at what seeds you've planted and then not be afraid to go deep with them is also cool, because it's very freeing in the writing, because you know stuff is going to come back, that whatever you're doing, you're going to be able to like bring that out.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, I grew up watching Hey Arnold, and I that's actually a very cool connection to know about, because I can sort of see that now that you mention it. And like, you know, characters like Mr. Wynn's episode, I mean, very much a tearjerker, and like even Stoop Kid, like, I love how they set that up too.
Stoop Kid and Pigeon Man, and there are all these things that they sort of like are able to like utilize in a very effective way, while staying a comedy, but also have this kind of like melancholic pace that is also fun to have in comedy shows, especially like kids' cartoons, where they generally have to be so rapid fire, rush, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think it just goes back to what we said earlier about like the 1-2 punch of comedy drama, because, you know, so often like you mentioned, Hey Arnold, you see the comedy. The characters are still funny. Like Stoop Kid will say something or do something and you can laugh at it. But then, you know, maybe fast forward towards the end of the episode, there is sort of a like a payoff that never feels like ham-fisted and like, you know, it's not overly preachy, but you do understand that like, oh, okay, I see the reason why this guy, you know, is acting the way he does. And, you know, right. Again, I appreciate that because it just, I feel builds worlds and creates connections better.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm also a filmmaker, so, you know, I'll talk shop a little bit, but, you know, I've never been one to, like, love gear. Like, I appreciate it as, like, a tool. You know, it's like a hammer if I need to fix something, but, you know, it just allows me to tell a story. And I think a lot of times filmmaking, after you do it for a few years, like, I've made a couple, you know, micro budget features and like a little web series and some shorts. And, you know, it's like, you kind of get the gist of it after a bit, but then it's, I feel like starts to feel overwhelming sometimes because you know how to make work technically, but then you start wondering like, am I saying anything? Are people watching? And then like, you know, I was actually talking to this to a friend recently and they were saying kind of in a good way, the best advice is like the cheesy, just do it and like just stubbornly do it, but realize why you're doing it and like connect back to the version of yourself. Like for me, which was like a kid in 2006, like making stupid YouTube videos just because it was fun. And then like that led me to go to film school and like get into it. But then I kind of like got into too much of the like, well, I got to do this and I got to get into this festival. And then it sort of just like warped the view. And I feel like recently I've kind of come back around a bit. And it's still not a perfect circle, but like, you know, at the end of the day, it helps me motivate. How do you do that for yourself? Because I know that, like, you know, the whole point of the podcast is like staying convinced to create. And, you know, sometimes it's ourselves that need the convincing. So like, kind of how do you help yourself get to that point?
I think for me, and everything you just said is true, and it is very tough, especially if you're trying to have it be your, you know, income, then it is very tough to stay like in that just having fun creative headspace, you know. But for me, the thing that has like driven it is a little bit what you said, where it's like I've always kind of started with like this idea is really exciting to me because it is so much work to make a thing, and it's so much effort and time and labor that if it's not a thing that you personally, that I am personally really excited about and driven by, then it's just, I don't even know why I'm doing it. And I end up just hating the whole experience. So anything that I've really gone through and made, like my favorite thing I ever made was this short film I made called Cramming, which is just about these two kids, these two eighth grade kids. One of them is a kid who in real life I tutored for a year. The other I met randomly at like a temp job I had when his mom was like, can you watch him for a few minutes? And he was just this like super funny kid. And, you know, it was in some small film festivals and stuff, but, you know, very few people have seen it. But that's still my favorite thing because I was so into the idea and I sort of became obsessed with like creating this thing and sort of willed it into existence, and that's so rewarding, and it feels so rewarding, even if it doesn't get some big payoff of like Flatbush did. Still, the excitement and the ability to then pull it off and make the thing that you're proud of the end product is when you do that, like that feels so good. You're like, oh, I can do this forever, and it doesn't matter. The like level of success doesn't matter because it that part of it is so fun for me, you know. But it has to be driven with like this idea is really exciting. I never really bought into and don't buy into when people are like, oh, my you know, my manager, my friend said I need to write a pilot or whatever. It's just like, if you don't want to do that and you don't have any thoughts or ideas for it, then, and it doesn't seem fun and it just seems like a task, then just kind of don't do it and go where the excitement or idea is and then let the medium figure itself out based on the idea.
Absolutely. No, I think that's really well said. And, you know, I can relate to that quite a bit. And, you know, I think there was one time where I made this series because I felt like this was like 2016 and I was like, oh, everyone's making web series. That's something I need to do. It was a fun time. Right. You know, it was a few years later that I made this like movie about like a rapper and his imaginary friend Panda Bear. And like, it was just the type of thing where like, it was a mascot costume Panda Bear. It looked like garbage. I mean, and we were like filming on the side of the road in rural North Carolina, and we just burst out laughing. And it was like this little small moment that like, I don't know, it almost like validated the whole thing. And like, that was all it needed to be. And
I was present.
Like that, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
getting too deep, but like, I don't know. There's
no. That idea of being present and that idea of just like living in the making of the thing. I mean, it's so fun to make shit, and so it's so much adrenaline, and it's so much, there's so much joy when it's like, when you're able to do it, like you just like never want to stop. So it's kind of chasing those like fleeting moments of like, yeah, just like full aliveness or whatever, you know. I have no interest in like skydiving or whatever people do for that rush, but that is what it feels like, you know. I'm sure it feels like that in terms of that kind of like, fun, and but also ability to like control, but freedom, and just like the sort of joy of it is very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, kind of like going into the creative process a bit, like what is your process? I know you mentioned a little bit of like character outlining and things like that when you're writing. Like, what do you look for when you know, do the thing, which is making something from nothing, as we all do, and we kind of, you know, face that blank page and, you know, make stuff happen one way or the other, you know, especially at these like micro budget levels. Like, kind of, do you have like a process? Like, you know, I know everyone's like, here's the 10 steps to do the thing, but, you know, what do you feel works for you?
For me, it's a couple things. It's, you know, it totally depends. Like, you know, I did an animated pilot for Fox a couple years ago, and it was like, and I knew nothing about animation. I had an idea for a show about like a city bus driver. I was like, oh, that could be cool. It's moving and it's da da da. You know, so it started with just like the character, you know? And so then I just sort of built it from there. But then there are other times, I guess I'll just kind of start with some micro thing. Like with that short that I made, cramming, I just started with like, I was tutoring this kid and he mentioned, I asked how this test went that he was studying for. And he said, oh, when I was walking in to take the test, the last class that took it was walking out. Some kids said it was really hard, and another kid said it was really easy. And I was like, oh yeah, that was such a moment. Like, it's such a specific micro little moment that is so indicative of character. Like, you have the kid who's performing like he didn't study at all, the kid who's really worried, the kid who thinks he's gonna fail, the kid who is acting like he like has it all under control. So it's like all these different characters, you're seeing the performative nature of it in such a small contained space, with stakes that maybe feel high in the moment but are actually just like nonsense. But when you're a kid, everything feels really high. And so I just wrote that as just a standalone scene, and I was just kind of living with that on my desktop for a couple months, and I didn't know if that would become anything. But I guess I'm kind of not afraid to like, or I like kind of just like having these little scraps and then seeing if there's a way to puzzle piece it into anything bigger, you know? I think sometimes people get intimidated when they don't feel like they have the full answer to a thing at the beginning, when it's like, okay to not. It's okay to just like, you have an idea for a scene, or you have an idea for like one exchange or something. And then, so write that and let that organically sort of evolve into something else. Don't get intimidated if you don't have like, don't know where the full movie is going immediately, because that's weird to know that, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, sometimes the like improvisational nature of it will come to you in the moment, like just through that one thing. Like, you know, a lot of times I'll be driving and I'll see something on the side of the road, like an old building or something, and like it will spark a question, and then I'll be like, oh, I should, you know, film a B-roll shot of that, and then where does that lead? And then there's a character right. that maybe is from there. And it's just these little moments that really don't have a lot to do with the ultimate full script, but they're just these little inspiration points. And I think the relatability matters too. Like, one thing I liked in your short was there was that part where they were in the bathroom and the kid was like, "The water burned my hands."
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. I know that's like a weird moment, but to me, like, I remember that. Like, I remember going to school and like the hot water was just set way too high. And it would like, and you had to be so quick, like, if you were using the sink. And like, I don't know, that spoke to me in a weird way. But I think it's just those little moments, or like, you know, I got like test taking flashbacks when I was watching.
Yeah, it's like the more like micro you can get with all the little moments, the same in Flatbush, like just the more you can zoom in, that always works better for me. The same in stand-up. I kind of like will start with the anecdote and then zoom out. Anytime I've tried to reverse engineer and be like, I'm gonna write a bit about love, or I'm gonna write a thing about a script about relationships, like it doesn't work for me. I've never been able to start at that big macro level. I've always just had to like, okay, this is a story, and then it's going to be what it's going to be, and it's going to have your voice and your take on stuff, so just let it be about what it's about, and don't feel like you have to like decide like, my thesis is that relationships are I think you can just kind of like you said, start with whatever that entry point is that gets you writing. You start there and then just kind of let it evolve as it does.
Yeah. You mentioned stand-up, so I'll just veer off for a minute. I know you do that as well, and I'm sure you've brought some of that into the world of, you know, filmmaking, even though they are, you know, very different. And it may not be like a one-to-one translation, but, you know, I think like the ultimate, I don't do stand-up, so maybe I'm wrong, but like, I think to me the ultimate thing of when I go to a show and I find like the big belly laughs that I wasn't expecting to happen, they happen when there's like a hint of truth that is, you know, uncovered that I almost like take for granted, you know, little moments. Like you had that bit, I looked at your website, some of the stand-up stuff, and there's one about like male friendships. And I found that really relatable because like, you know, a lot of times with my, you know, really close male friends I've known for years, like I couldn't always tell you everything they're doing in their personal life or what their mom's up to. It's like, we'll talk about one or two things very specifically.
That's the most fun for me in stand-up, is if you're able to like articulate some kind of idea that you feel like hasn't really been hit, but or whatever your limitation is. And that's nice when other people say that. I think ironically with that bit, which is about like kind of the superficiality of male friendships, like very often like the people who enjoy that bit even more are women, because they're just like, I'm so frustrated with my boyfriend or husband for that exact reason. They're just like, yes, they're broken, this person that I love. But yeah, that's fun to do. And then it's like, okay, is there a way to take that and evolve it into a longer thing? But those are like, yeah, the most rewarding bits to do, where it's like there's some idea here that's like the undercurrent of it, but you're able to like latch it onto a specific enough thing that feels, yeah, it's a very careful tightrope to walk, where you have to be like personal but also relatable. And if it's too personal, everyone's kind of like, what? Or it becomes kind of like one man showy, but when there's some universality to it, it's just figuring out what that is. But I love that. I love that stuff.
Yeah, no, I think it's the bread and butter a lot of times of what makes stuff work and tick. You know, we've talked a bit about like the storytelling process and you know, writing specifically. Do you ever like write more than one thing at a time? Like, you know, for me, I used to always be very like, you know, put on the blinders, you know, I'm writing this feature, I'm writing this little short, that's all I'm doing till it's done. But like for me as of late, I've actually been jumping around to a few different things. Like I've got like a comedy thing, a horror thing, and just a little short. And I find that like jumping around helps me like see different avenues, you know, in the horror piece that I wasn't seeing before when I come back to it. Do you ever do stuff like that, leapfrog your way?
I agree with that. I think for me, it's like when I work kind of frenetically, and I like working and feel better when I am working. And so for me, it's like I almost, when I'm just working on one thing, I feel a little more overwhelmed just trying to put everything in one basket. I try to be pretty disciplined with it. I set deadlines for myself, and have other people hold me accountable where I'm like, can you just say I need to have this to you by this day or whatever? So just like when you're accountable to somebody else, I think that's helpful. But yeah, I also like hopping around, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm like, and we're doing season two of Flatbush, and so we're getting ready for that. And I'm like, okay, but here's I have to rewrite this feature and pitch another one, and I have this treatment for another show. And so it's just a thing where it's like when I feel stuck with one thing, I can hop to something else, and it feels like a mental escape instead of just like it's either this or I'll just be on YouTube for 6 hours,
Yeah, the YouTube rabbit holes are dangerous.
They really are. Someone told me an extension that I put on that is helpful, where it cuts off the related videos.
I need that.
So you have that?
I need that.
Oh yeah. I did that. So that's like, because that would be hours right there. So I did install that extension, but still don't follow it.
Oh,
Like
sure.
I'll still just stick around for hours. But yeah, it's tough. But anyway, yeah. But that hopping between a couple different things, I think, lets your brain stay excited also, and that's why it's nice to. I'll just go and do spots sometimes, like stand up wise. I did a show last night and night before. It's just, it just keeps your muscle loose, and this thing that could be overwhelming also just becomes a more fun creative expression also.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I very much relate to that because I think when I'm writing, I joked around about YouTube stuff, but that is a legitimate problem for me sometimes. Like,
Oh yeah, I think for everybody, yeah. I think it's
it's ironic that like the machine we use to write also accesses the whole internet.
I know it's too much. It's like way too much, and it's very tough to stay like locked in and focused and stuff. And that's the other thing. Oh, we're talking about process, but that's the other thing that is helpful for me is I will turn off the Wi-Fi and just do like, I might do like, okay, 20 minutes of like focused writing or half hour of focused writing, and we'll get more done in that span than like I'm writing today. When I do that, I will very often get damn near zero done. But when I'm just like, I set the timer on my phone and I'm like, go, and then I will get more done in that short span than when I am just like sitting half with a Google Doc, half like listening to a thing, then half talking on to a friend on the phone for 40 minutes, so yeah, it's just finding ways to trick your brain. I'll give one other tip that is helpful for me. But if I'm working on a script, I have a very hard time like editing page 37 of a script. I feel overwhelmed. So I'll just work on that one scene as like an independent doc. So I can only feel like, all right, I'm just working on two pages, and that it's just any way you can, whatever works for you, but any way that can you can trick your brain into doing work is all I have to do. And it's very silly that you feel like you have to trick your brain, but that is how it feels.
It absolutely does. And I have like ADHD brain, so it just always wants to do like too many things. And I relate to what you said earlier about like I truly do feel better when I'm working versus when I'm just like sitting around being like, oh, I need to write. And then you just kind of do that thing where you beat yourself up on it. And then you like 4 hours later, I'm watching a video on YouTube about like the logistics of shipping Amazon packages. And I'm like, what is wrong with me? Like, why am I doing this? And just that YouTube rabbit hole opens up. And I've tricked my brain. Like, what I tend to do is I'll take the laptop outside. And like, for me, something about being outside, even though yes, there can be internet access depending where you are, it's just being in a different environment that's not my room seems to help with that process. And like, I mean, literally yesterday, occasionally I'll bribe myself. Like, I'll just be like, yo, Evan, if you write today, you can go to that place for lunch. Or, you know, you know, I bought myself Metroid Dread for the Switch, and I was like, that's your little prize for writing 20
Right.
years.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. You treat yourself. You give yourself some, like whatever it takes, you know, to trick your brain into getting the thing done and motivate yourself. It's like, you got to do it, you know?
Yeah, and if you're a fellow writer out there listening to us chat about this, you may be thinking, do y'all even like this process? And I promise you, we do. It's just like,
You do.
Sometimes it's hard to, you know, start that lawnmower.
No, I know, man. And that's what, it's like, and when you're on deadline, it's so much easier. You don't have a choice. I always liked those kind of in-class essays in school because you just had to get it done. It's like, okay, in 40 minutes, you're going to turn in a blue book or whatever, you know? It's like, okay, you don't have a choice to second guess yourself or dick around. But then when they're like, you have a month to write this research paper, I'd be like, well, I'm going to do nothing for 3 weeks and torture myself thinking I should be doing it. And then I'm going to have a couple days of a lot of work. So it's nice to like feel like you're torturing yourself less, but otherwise it's just like, okay, how do I piece this together?
Yeah, I mean, school was always a challenge for me growing up, and I think that's why I related to like the test taking part of your film, because it was just like I always procrastinated. Like I would study so hard the night before, and I remember like my mom would walk by and be like, why do you do this to yourself? And I'd be like, that's a great question. I'll let you know when I find out. Like,
yeah, I have no idea. Yeah.
Like, couldn't tell you for the world.
Yeah, but I will keep doing it.
Right. Yeah. Somehow it's like, I think what it is like, it's like that process of like having a fire under your ass where it's like, okay, this is all I can do right now. There's nothing else that will take my attention, because when you do wait till the last minute, like it is truly do or die in a way. And I think that's why deadlines sometimes, like you said, feel good, because it's like, okay, yes, it's stressful, but in a way it clears the road, parts the sea for you to just do the thing you need to do.
For sure. And that's why it's like, if you have a friend you can talk to and maybe you can say you'll swap pages or whatever, even if you're not even going to read one another's stuff, but just to like give yourself some deadline, you know, anything I think is better than just the internal. 'Cause then it's tough to, you know, I could give a full list of things that I haven't gotten around to yet. 'Cause no one is demanding it of me.
Right. Right. Shifting gears a slight bit, what do you feel like is a part of the just general storytelling process a lot of people overlook?
I think that's a good question. I'm sure I'll think of a better answer after I give this one, but
it always works that way.
Yeah, but I guess I think sometimes, and this speaks to what I was saying about thinking that you have to know the whole story before you write it. I think sometimes people think they are like have to like aim for a specific ending, you know, and then the whole thing is kind of reverse engineered to get to that ending, even if the ending, the way it plays out, it doesn't like make a lot of sense, you know. I don't know. Very often I'll see stuff. I think my favorite stuff to see is stuff where I'm like, oh, this is like almost good, you know, but how could this have been better? You know, like stuff that's a complete train wreck isn't fun. And stuff that is great can just be like frustrating how good it is, you know? But yeah, I guess being able to like, To realize that it doesn't have to be some. You can kind of take your time. I mean, I just rewatched Do the Right Thing, which is I mean, it's such an amazing movie and is so like kind of like maddening how good it is.
Yeah.
And what's so amazing about that movie is that there is a world, and we were talking about comedy and drama. There is a world where it's like, you know, he could have just decided what I'm sure was in some level what he wanted to decide, which is that, you know, he wants to make a movie showing like police brutality and, you know, tension and stuff. And we've seen a million like, you know, film festival-y super dramatic versions of that, you know? But instead what he does is like paint this like beautiful, like tapestry and vignette-y portrayal of this neighborhood that kind of like organically lets itself just like live with these characters, and let the story come through these characters that we care about. And I guess that's the thing that is my favorite thing that I sometimes wish I would see more, is just like, let's just like, if you care about these characters, anything, not a lot has to happen, you know? And anything that does happen feels very substantial because you care about it. And stuff that is super like, this happens and then this happens and then this happens. If I don't care if anybody lives or dies, which is the case with, you know, a lot of apocalypse movies, you know, it's just like, you know what I mean? It's like there are all these apocalypse movies where it's like everybody on Earth died, and I also just like don't care one bit because I don't care about any of them, you know? Whereas there are things where it's like, I'll watch a movie, I'll watch like Leave No Trace or whatever, and the girl has to like leave a home she's been in for a week, and I like care so deeply because I like care about these people, you know? So I guess that's the biggest thing, is you don't have to know where it's ending, and you can let the characters and how they're sort of plotting out, let that present it, rather than deciding it's a story about X.
I just tend to gravitate to like, three, four character movies, the stuff I'm writing. And like, just because, I mean, A is the micro budget thing because I don't have a lot of resource to work with. But B is just
Sure.
because I have to care about those characters. Because
Right,
if
right.
I don't care about those characters, like,
Nobody's gonna care.
no one's gonna care. Like, why would they watch anything I make? Like, and so I think that's part of it too. Because if you get too much going on, it's almost too much to ask of yourself to care, let alone anyone else.
And I think, and if I could add one other thing that I just remembered, is I very much find frustrating sometimes when I'm watching a thing and it feels like it's being written in a way that is very much judging the character. Like the writer has already decided who's right and who's wrong. Which is a fine, you know, we've seen great stuff that is that way. But what's more interesting to me is like, it's clearly written with, you can be in the mindset of each of the characters, even ones with opposing points of view, even one where someone does a wrong thing, or fucks up or makes a clear mistake, that you can kind of empathize with them. I think when characters aren't written with empathy, it makes the story weaker because it's a little contrived. It's not really how life is that I experience, where there's like, you know, good and bad. You know, I get, obviously that's effective in, you know, more comic book world, but to try to do something beyond that, I think just is like also like better for story. It just drives more story.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it, connects to what we said about the comic relief characters on the show having more depth, because it's almost insulting if you just put someone in a world as, a comic relief. And like, I mean, I don't know. Again, there's nothing wrong with straight comedy. I'm not trying, because sometimes I just need to put that on some days, That's cool. But, I do think it asks a little more of you to imagine a world where this person is not always funny every moment. It's not like they wake up and the moment their eyes open, it's like time to be funny.
Right. Well, it's just like, and it's also like who, and so for a character that is purely funny, like who are they
Why are
that
they
made
that
them that
way?
way? And for a character that's purely like evil or whatever, like what happened that made them that way? Or like what is underneath that? Because underneath any anger is sadness, and underneath like a bubbly surface is something they're masking. And so it's like, how do you like weave that with their interactions in a way that is not like, you know, a maudlin or whatever.
Slightly shifting gears again, location I know is really big for the work you're making. Really putting a part of New York into the show that you don't always see. What do you think is important about that? Just really like having a sense of place that, is palpable that you can feel. I know you're living there as well, so like why is it important? I think it's pretty important to make work where you live. Like I put a lot of, North Carolina in my movies because that's where I'm at. And like people are like, "Oh, I didn't know, this place with hipsters was in North Carolina. I thought it was just like banjos and fields." And like I love just showing people things that you don't expect to see. Like
I think that specificity always makes me latch on to stuff when I'm watching it, even if it's a place I know nothing about, you know. I've never I've you know I've never been to Oregon and watch stuff there, and I'm like, oh, that's very specific, or so many places, and I'll just see it really like, something that feels very lived in. I'm like, oh, awesome, So I think that specificity is also cool because then people watch and I think they find wherever they are. When we made the original web series, what the cool thing at film festivals was like, oh, this reminds me of this place, or this is kind of like this place where I live in some other country, and that's awesome. And I think, again, I think that only comes from being very specific with the place. And I think there's something like a little like, I also want to use the word like romantic when you're watching it. It feels nice. It feels escapist if it's a place you're not from, in a way that when it's just some sanded down generic, like this is a set that looks like New York or whatever, and it's not even clear what it's supposed to be, then it just kind of it blends in with everything else. But also, I mean, I think the cool thing is you can kind of enter a world that you don't. It's those, it can, the cliche is it transporting you or whatever, but you can like enter this very specific world. And yeah, it's fun to show a way that, like, of New York that I feel like this is sort of how I see New York, where it's like a lot of different kinds of people coexisting and bumping into each other and stepping on each other. And they have to coexist while they're all focused on their own shit. They all have their own goals, but they all have to like stand very close to each other. And to show that, I think is cool.
And that's something I think that's very unique for New York, and you bring it out in the show, I think, quite well.
Thanks so much.
So to kind of like land the plane a bit, I do want to ask about some advice, but before that, I just completely thought of a new question I meant to ask you earlier. How are you looking at things now? We talked a ton about writing, but you're also acting in the show as well as, producing, guiding the show in the direction and everything, and planning it as an executive producer. What is that role like for you, kind of stepping onto that larger plane, coming off of micro budgets? Because, you're someone who I relate to a lot in the way you were making work before the show. And so, like, now that you're on that other stage, like, how is that feeling to you? Because I know, like, so many people are like, oh, I've always done the Hollywood way, so that's normal. But, like, for you, I feel like that's like a new world in a way. So, how did you kind of acclimate?
Well, it's funny because it's, there's adjustments that are good and there's adjustments that are like, oh yeah, I guess we can't, like the days of like we'll just bring a camera. Like, what do you mean? We'll just bring a camera onto the subway and just shoot on the subway. It's like, I know. Oh yeah, you need a permit. Like I had never gotten a permit in my life. I had no idea. I didn't even know how to get one. And so that stuff is out. So you're like, oh okay, you can't do that shit. But then there's the added element of like, with micro budget stuff, you're very used to doing stuff on the fly, and you're very used to, okay, we have to make this compromise. So when production comes to you and says, okay, so this, 4-page scene has to become a 2-page scene, or these two locations have to be merged to one location, that's not as unthinkable an ask as it would be if you didn't already have that experience for years. Like, on a show, and the TV show is like, it's like a low budget show comparatively, compared to, it's far from Game of Thrones, but still by my measure, it's the biggest budget I've ever worked with, So often they're running around being like, we have no money. And I'm like, no, I've had no money. Like, you don't understand. I have like lied and said I was like a Greek student at City College finishing a class project to get into a school. Like, we've bribed a janitor. Like, just like, no. This is like, we're okay, So, but it is just like, it's just figuring out that was, I guess, the adjustment on the pro and con. But all in all, it does let you, just be able to do more. And it's fun to just like navigate that tightrope. And also one added thing is it in a weird way alleviates some pressure, because you have these other departments you can kind of empower. And I'm sure anybody listening who's made independent work, you already have to wear 1 million hats. You are kind of doing everything, So if you're producing your own independent stuff, so it's just like, so that adjustment to a bigger scale. In some ways, it's just like, sort of building this team and then being able to then just trust them, and then that takes a huge burden off you as well. So you can focus on the other stuff, which there's
Yeah,
plenty of.
absolutely. No, I mean, I think it's that trial by fire in a way that, helps make the indie stuff happen in the only way that that can.
And you fuck up. You make huge mistakes. When you make independent work, you make huge mistakes. In the web series originally, there are massive mistakes in all three that we did. But it's okay. I mean, you learn it, and then you make the show, and you make you, it's very difficult for me to watch any of my own stuff, especially because I'm in it. But once I'm done with the cuts and all that, but it is nice. I mean, you just kind of you see the mistakes, and then you can just bring that into the next thing. So it's all constructive. It's all useful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think too, everything that can go wrong typically does on the indie stuff. Like I had a cinematographer like drop out very soon before this feature I made, and I ended up just running camera the whole thing, and like it was fine. Like, I would have preferred to have someone there, of course, but like, it's funny, it's just again coming back to that like fire under your ass. Like that was the fire, and I was like, well, I'm either gonna do it or it's just not gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen. And then but then when you pull it off, you're like, man, that's like awesome. That feels so good. Because it shouldn't have gotten done, but it got done because you were driven enough to make it happen, you know?
And it's cool to like kind of feel like you pulled one over on the world, like because the world was, it seemed like it was fighting against you, but
You were stubborn enough to throw it out there.
yeah, it's almost like now you walk off to the set, the quote unquote set that you paid someone to be on, but you feel like Roger Deakins. You're like, yes, okay. Dude, well, to land the plane, this is the final question, and thank you again. This was, I think, a really awesome conversation. But this is the last thing I typically ask everyone, which is just how do you convince yourself to be creative? And is there any just general advice you'd give to someone who wants to do this, maybe coming from the micro budget world? And just, I think at the end of the day, people forget it's not like there's a, big jump point where a film is a film and it's just about telling a story. Like,
I mean, I guess I would say to just like to not be afraid to make what's interesting to you and not what you think other people want. Because, if you talk to anyone in the industry, everyone's always like, they're hot about whatever is hot at the moment, and then they're over it, So kind of disregarding that the best you can. And there's a certain freedom in the micro budget stuff because you can just make what you want to make and just put it out into the world. And even if 50 people see it, it's something and it exists, and it's something that didn't exist before. And it also just like not being afraid to like be bad, with stand up, when I started, I went and I bombed everywhere. I had no idea how to be on stage. I could write jokes okay, but I had no idea how to deliver them. I couldn't make eye contact with anybody. I couldn't do it. You just keep going, and it's okay to be bad. And just like we were talking about, you make huge mistakes. On the show, there are mistakes. It's just a thing that happens. And sort of like being willing to let it be imperfect. It's already probably going to be, if you're like nervous to do it because it won't be perfect, it will already probably be better than you think. And so just and let yourself like, just let yourself make it and fall down and have a thing, and everything you subsequently make is going to be informed by that experience. So,
Well, it's the journey starts with a single step, as cliche as that is. You make a film, you're a filmmaker. I mean, it's a short, a TikTok, whatever you need it to be. But if it gets you out there and informs you to, do something you care about, I think that's,
And also, and sorry to
Yep,
jump,
no.
but yeah, and like this disregarding whatever people say the like rules are. I think sometimes a lot of these classes and a lot of these like stories have to have this and then this by the third act and the whatever. It's like, fuck that. Like, you know, that's whatever. Like, I get that there's a place for it, but like, who cares? Especially if that's hanging people up on making a thing. It's just like such nonsense. And I forget who had that quote, said something to the effect of like, movies have to have this, 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 and this, except every movie you like. Those
Yeah,
disregarded.
it's always
Those.
like the films you know broke all the rules, but
Yeah, they
then
broke
play
all
the
the
rules
rules.
anyway.
It's
Like,
just like, yeah, okay. So what are these rules? This is all pretend.
yeah. Well, that's the thing. We're all playing pretend in
Yeah.
magic world of filmmaking, so you gotta at least have fun with it.
Sure.
Dan, thank you again. Really appreciate it. Where can folks keep up with you if they want to check out your stuff?
It's at Dan J. Perlman. That's DanjPerlman on Twitter, Instagram, and then Flatbush Misdemeanors season 1 is streaming on Showtime right now.
Yeah, well, everyone go watch Flatbush. I can speak to it. It's very entertaining, funny, and dramatic. I think it's a show you'll enjoy. Dan, thank you again. If you're listening to the podcast, please check us out. We're on all your favorite streaming platforms, as well as video versions on YouTube. Thanks again, and we'll see you all in the next episode.